Okay, let's get started. We're already 3:58. Someone, I don't have a watch, so you know, someone will keep me to the time, and the people that have to leave will leave, and the people that can stay will stay.
Maybe exactly 10.
So Purim, Purim is an unusual Yom Tov, and it's unlike the others. The question for us today is why. Purim is distinct, not only because it's not biblical and doesn't appear in Chamisha Chumshei Torah, not only because it's Midivrei Sofrim, to use a phrase that's used by many, which is different than Derabanan. So not only because of those things is Purim different, but also substantively the holiday of Purim is just a very different kind of holiday. And I think our own personal experience attests to that. You know, how many of us, we've all had many Purims, we've been gripped by the Megillah and the dramatic story. We've gone around doing Mishloach Manos. I know it's very popular. I certainly did it as a kid. And we've also enjoyed, you know, very festive kind of meals, not to mention drinking. So, like, how truly different our Purim experience is when we compare it just on an experiential level. The way we, each in our own lives, have experienced Purim, how different does it feel to us than a typical Yom Tov? I just wanted to mention now, I wanted to say before, this is like the first Chabur we're having. Typically, like the goal of the Chabur, as I see it, is for it to be very interactive. The nature of this year, of course, I welcome questions, but I'm not going to like solicit, you know, you to think as much as like I do hope on a regular Chabur. Especially important to know as a group, you know, for the next couple of weeks that we have together, that is the plan for the Chabur, so they shouldn't be representative of like what I hope everyone, how much involvement everyone usually has. So the kind of what we're trying to deal with is exactly, you know, why Purim is really so different than the others, which I think we can all attest to. So while on the one hand Purim like definitely is like it's grouped part of the special group of Yom Tovim, you know, when we think about, even though it's Derabanan, we think about Yom Tov or we think about Purim, there's Simcha, there's like a mitzvah, there's mitzvos of Kriyas HaMegillah, there's usually like a special mitzvah on each holiday. And also other special mitzvahs hayom, and we'll also discuss Isra Malacha, which is a little bit complicated about Purim. On the one hand, Purim is like the others, but on the other hand, it's also very different. Like we conclude, and we all know this to be true, that there's no Isra Malacha on the holiday of Purim, at least Me'ikar Adin. There may or may not be Hallel at all, which even makes Purim then different from Chanukah, if there's really no Hallel, if that is, in the end, how we paskin. Because there's no hallel, to be clear, but there may be a different kind of hallel if the Megillah is a hallel. But there may also not be hallel if we take one of the other two views in the Gemara. It's just the short of it, Hamevin Yavim. And there's no Korban Musaf, and there may also be Avelus. There may be mourning on the Holiday of Purim, which seems to be how we paskin. Even if there are no public expressions, it's not like other Yom Tovim, which have no Avelus whatsoever. So I want to try to understand with all of us right now, like, what lies at the heart of Purim's unusual status? In what ways it's different? And ultimately, why Mordechai v'Esther and Anshei Knesset HaGedolah chose to establish the holiday of Purim in such a unique and such a different way? So let's begin. So, what kind of holiday was Purim supposed to be? When the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah were trying to figure out how exactly to be metakein the holiday of Purim, they actually grappled with it. They went back and forth, which is an interesting concept, that they themselves weren't sure, and we actually have exposure to their shock of Ataria, if you will. In the Megillah, in Perek Tes, the Psukim, I was about to say the Gemara, the Psukim go through, you know, different iterations of how Purim was eventually to be like we have it today. And if you look almost at like the Havamina and the Maskana of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, you find something very interesting. Was Purim to be like a typical Yom Tov, which of course we might expect, or is it to be something totally different to bring out the true spirit of Purim? So as Mori Barabi with Rosenzweig like often likes to point out, if you look at this back and forth, which we'll look at in just a minute in source number two, it turns out that Purim wasn't exactly like the others, and there are differences in terms of how it was initially thought to be and what ultimately it came to be. So if you look in Perek Tes, in source number two, it kind of begins in the middle, like a little bit into it. So as the story happened, I put over there by the number one. So on the 14th day, well, let's say like this: Biyom Shlosha Asar L'Chodesh Adar. That's when they did all of the war, and they were successful. The Jews, this is the Jews in like, you know, the larger population in the unwalled cities and villages. They rested, v'noach ba'avos arbo. On the 14th of Av is when they rested, and it's on that day when they had respite and appreciate, were able to appreciate the miracle that they made it into the asa oso yom mishle v'simcha. They made it into a day of mishle v'simcha. The same is true for the B'nai Tesvav, for those who lived in Shushan, in the walled city of Shushan. So they had the same thing, but instead of being on the 14th, it was on the 15th. So if you just skip to the bold, V'noach b'chamisha sarbo and pasuk yirches v'aso, so yom mishteh v'simcha. Mishteh, as opposed to the common, like unconventional simcha, is a very unusual depiction of joy. And we never have mishteh. Simcha, of course, is all over the place. Where do you find simcha, Yoel? By Yom Tovim? Yeah, everywhere. That's the real answer. You know, what does it go? Mitzvah gedol yos b'simcha. But simcha, at least when it comes to Yom Tovim, and ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, v'samachta v'chagecha. That's, of course, one of the primary expressions of how a Jew is supposed to be on the Yom Tov, the Shalosh Regalos. Maybe Rosh Hashanah Kippur too, that kind of gets into that. That's a question. But Mishneh we don't find in all of Chumash, unless it's with respect to like Shtia, with drinking. So Mishneh, especially because of the drinking part, right, but you don't get ever the phrase that a day, the day should be a day of partying, honestly. Mishteh is like partying, and that's kind of, that's how like the Rav even translates it, intentionally, which I thought was interesting, like partying. You, I also saw a smile, that's why I mentioned it. It's a very unusual depiction, and the idea that it's like to party and to drink, is to be festive and merry, already seems to highlight, you know, Purim being different. That Mishteh comes first, and only then that you have Simcha. But then, if you look now at Pasuk Yates, is the first time, that's how they experienced it as it happened. But then when you look to the first time, when they tried to establish it, Midori Doros, what would the holiday of Purim be forever? This is what they thought of. The B'nai Yadalid in Pasuk Yates said, Al-Kain, Ha-Yehudim, Ha-Prazin, now they were thinking beyond themselves. They were thinking about having an annual celebration for themselves, for their children, and for all the future generations of Klal Yisrael. Those Hayoshim Ari HaPrazos Osim Es Yom Arba Asar L'Chodesh Adar on the 14th, this is what they came up with. Simcha U'Mishteh, they flipped it, note the difference. V'Yom Tov, they added Yom Tov. U'Mishloach Manos Ishrayehu. And they added Mishloach Manos. This is how they first conceived of how the holiday of Purim would be celebrated. And it's much more like a, more of like a classical Yom Tov experience. They call Purim a Yom Tov. And Simcha is what's primary, Mishteh is only secondary. But you could come.
I don't want to interrupt the shiur again.
Yeah, I know. That's, we have, you have a track record.
I have a bad track record.
But in the final iteration, the one which Mordechai, no less, delivered, if you look in Pasuk Chaf, Vayichtov Mordechai es hadvarim ha'ele, Vayishlach sifarim. Maybe we'll have someone else read. Alicia, do you mind continuing? So now he's writing it, Mordechai, not just the Chachmei, you know, the Chachmei of Klal Yisrael, but now Mordechai is putting it down on permanent ink. L'kayim aleihem, what does he want them to do, those near and far? Chav Aleph, yeah. Well, if you go to Binyamin.
Yes, you know
the word. Pasuk Chav Aleph.
You know what we should do?
L'kayim aleihem. So the 14th and 15th will be Purim. Now it's B'chol Shana V'Shana. So it should be an annual celebration. And here it is. Yo, you got to read the big one. Kayamim.
Kayamim asher nasu bahem ha'yudim. Me'oibahem. V'achodesh asher nehetah. Lahem miyagam simpa.
So now notice the difference between how Mordechai decided to go with it, despite how it was originally conceived of. La'asos osam. Three differences. What do you notice? What's the differences? Mishteh and Simcha is back to its form. It's not Simcha Mishteh, that's number one. Number two, we added Matanos Avionim, and maybe, and the one that the Gemara actually points out, number three, is we dropped what? Yom Tov.
Well, we said Yom Tov. We Eva LeYom Tov.
No, that, well, that was the month turned from Eva LeYom Tov, and that's not a part of the description. Right. And either way, we should just be aware that Gemara and Megillah Daf Hei Amud Beis identifies that it's significant that we dropped Yom Tov. That in the final version of how Purim was to be kept by us, doesn't have Yom Tov. So if you look at the Gemara and Megillah Daf Hei Amud Beis, that is a tremendously very interesting issue. Does Purim have Isser Melacha? Of course, that's a very consequential issue. Yom Tov, even more than Simcha, it goes to the essence of what any Yom Tov is like. For sure, Shabbos. You think about Shabbos, Shabbos by definition is Shvisa Mimalacha. The whole idea of Shabbos is that we rest Kibo Shavas Mikom Malachto, the same way the Ribono Shel Olam rested. So even though it's a little bit different on Yom Tov, Shabbos as like the paradigm of Kedusha is exactly how we experience Yom Tov. We abstain from work. So whether or not Purim is going to have an Isser Melacha, a lot is riding on that type factor. So when we see now, see, look at this Gemara, which is basically coming on the heels of the Psukim in Megillas Esther, we should be aware of how serious and significant this sort of discussion is. So in source number 3, the Gemara discusses this question. Isser Melacha on Purim. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Nata Netiyah B'Purim. So Rabbi went out and planted, he did the Melacha of Noteya, one of the Lamites Melachos. He did that on Purim itself. Seems very okay that he did that. You know, he did it. Until the Gemara questions Rebbe's behavior. Of course, as Rebbe is doing it, it's kasher beinayim, shalanu. So Rebbe says, the Gemara says, V'Rebbe, in the next line, Heichi nata netia b'forin. V'hatani Rav Yosef, simcha umishte v'yom tov. Right, the last, the second, you know, version of the story. Simcha melamed she'asurim behasbeit. Mishte melamed she'asur b'taynis. You can't eulogize, you can't fast. The Yom Tov Milamed, what? Shasurin Vasiyas Melacha. So how could Rebbe have done the Melacha of Noteya? Here the Gemara is assuming there is, in fact, in principle, an Isser Melacha on Purim. Again, Purim to begin with is only Midivrei Sofrim. It's not going to be Melacha De'araisa, but it is an Isser Melacha nonetheless. So the Gemara answers, just for time's sake, we'll skip some of the Shaka Vitaria. The Gemara answers basically that the Isser Melacha is only limited to the day on which you observe Purim. Other things apply to both the 14th and the 15th. Like, what are things that we don't do on the 15th? Is there Tachanun on the 15th? No, we don't read Megillah because our Purim is the 14th. So often things, even that are only observed on Purim, we do on both days. Even a Ben Yadalad will do things even on the on Tesvav. So we don't, obviously we don't read Megillah.
Don't we not say Tachanun?
I think that's in Nisan or Siva. So that's one of the things. So when it comes to eulogizing, maybe, and fasting, so that we don't do on both days. But Malacha was only on the day on which your Purim is. So the Gemara first tries to say, okay, so Rebbe only did planting on the other day.
Does think about it all wearing, like as opposed to wearing, like if you're not wearing a costume, wearing like Big Day Shabbos?
Those kinds of things, yeah, these are discussions in Shulchan Aruch, basically. Very good question. So, but this answer basically assumes that what? There is in Isser Melacha. But the Gemara gives a second answer. The Gemara says, now we're turning to page 2, we move fast through these Mekoros. Rabba Berei Derava Amar, if you skip to the fourth paragraph, Rabba Berei Derava Amar, everyone see? Afilu Tema B'yomei, even if Rebbe did the Melacha of Noteya on the day of Purim, Hesbed V'tainis Kabilu Alayu, Melacha Lo Kabilu Alayu. Purim was accepted to be a day where there'd be no eulogizing and no fasting, but the Jewish people, Klal Yisrael, didn't accept to observe the Isser Melacha on Purim. And what's his makor? Dimeikar Ksiv, Simcha Umishte V'yom Tov. Who read that one? Who read the first? Did I read that? Not like I read. The original reading was Simcha Umishte V'yom Tov. And that's where Yom Tov, it may be in Isser Melacha, because that's where we learn it from. But Ulubasov Ksiv, Lasos, Sosam, Yimei Mishtev, Visimcha, Vilu Yom Tov, Lok Ksiv. So there's no, because it was taken out and dropped, even though there was a Havamina, it makes a lot of sense to assume Purim should be Asr b'malacha, like all of the other Yamim Tovim. That's what we know of. That's the Kein D'Oraisa Tikkun. But Lemaskana, for maybe a specific reason, intentionally Mordechai decided that the holiday of Purim would be one that was absent the Isra Malacha. That people would do work. There'd be no Isra Malacha whatsoever. And therefore, this Havamina Maskana is something for us to consider. You could not have an Isra Malacha because the day isn't worthy of Isra Malacha. Like a regular day, like today. But you could also, which seems to be the case of Purim, not have Isra Malacha because maybe the goal, what the day is supposed to be all about, belies in Isra Malacha. Bishita. Intentionally, there is no Isra Malacha. And that is something that we would need to understand. Ah. Good. But that's in terms of the difference between Yom Tov, having Yom Tov, and not having Yom Tov. But what about two of the other differences? What does it mean, what, in terms of, let's speak specifically, of Mishneh V'Simcha? What does it mean to say that instead of it being first a Simcha that has Mishneh, being a Mishneh, this unique and unusual description of joy, that the Mishneh is what leads to the Simcha? So when we think about the Simcha of Purim and the idea that it was ultimately to be different than a typical Yom Tov Simcha, what kind of Simcha exists on Purim as opposed to other Yamim Tovim? I think we find, very interestingly, about the Simcha of Purim, and this is something Rav Rosenzweig pointed out also, that the Mishneh V'Simcha was the final version. Maybe this has to do with the subtle, but I think substantial difference between Simcha's Yom Tov and the Simcha, or really Mishneh, of Purim. In many ways, the Simcha, quote-unquote, of Purim is more intense than the Simcha of Yom Tov, of V'samachta B'chagecha. The Gemara Msachim, which I think is on the bottom of page 4, yeah, Sachim Samaches, yeah, source number 4, page 3, yeah, thank you. The very next source, that was a good hint, establishes that the Simcha of Purim is more intense than other Yom Tovim, interestingly. There's this very big debate in general about Simchas Yom Tov, whether the day should be experienced. It's a debate between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua, whether the day should be Kulo LaHashem or Kulo Lachem. Or Chatzi LaHashem or Chatzi Lachem. The Chatzi Lachem. There are two ways, in other words, to observe any Yom Tov. Either the position of Rabbi Elazar is that you could either choose to do the whole day being things which are more directly spiritual, you can learn, you can daven, the whole day could be about that. Or the whole day could be about lachem, could be about eating, drinking, food. That's the vision of Rabbi Elazar, but never could you combine those two modes of simcha. That, of course, that's not the position that we adopt. The position we adopt is the position of Rabbi Yoshua, who says chatzi lachem mechatzi lachem. Where the Rambam codifies it, is that you spend the first portion of the day, this is what we do, davening, learning, and then the rest of the day, you know, it's always good to learn a little bit more in the afternoon also. But the afternoon, we eat, we sleep, we do the lachem part. We're very makbid on the lachem part. And that's how we paskin. But the Gemara, in the rest of the Shaka V'Tarya, says that no matter what, no matter which shita you hold like, everyone agrees that Purim is an exception. On Purim, there must also be an expression of lachem. And even Rabbi Elazar will have to agree. And what's the reason for that? In the bold, in source number 4, doing this fast, because we're running short on time. Amar Rav Yosef, maybe we'll have our printer. Not our printer, you're more than just a printer to us, but maybe you'll read the, you appreciate how important, you know, the Makoros are, that you are willing to spend your own printing money on it. Amar Rav Yosef, Hakol Modim Bipurim, and what's the reason why Purim? There's no exception. You have to have a lachem part. Oh, and by the way, notice Mishteh V'Simcha. The riff goes even further in his quotation of this Gemara. It's not only Mishteh V'Simcha that you have the words there, so therefore you have to pay homage to it. Says the riff in source number 5, Hakol Modim B'Purim D'Me'ina Nami Lachem. Lahachi iskin, that was the whole purpose. That's what Purim was established for. So if you're not going to have Simcha, Mishteh V'Simcha, sorry, I almost made a giant mistake. if you're not going to mishu simcha, what are you doing? What's your Purim about? Fascinating, shocking. By other Yomim Tovim, that's not the case. But by Purim, there's no excuse to not partake of mishta v'simcha. We're all familiar, I'm sure many of us are familiar, you'll nod your heads or shake your heads depending on whether I'm right or wrong, with the famous Levush in Ovos Chanukah. Now when it comes to the holiday of Chanukah, there's no feasting or drinking, there's no Chiyuv Se'uda, but only on Purim. And he asked why, when it came to Chanukah, is there none, even though on Purim, there is. And he says it has to do with the physical or open miracle versus the body or the hidden miracle. This is the Levush. But the truth is, forget about Chanukah, Purim has more of an obligation of Mishta V'Simcha not only than Chanukah, but even than all Yomim Tovim. So forget about the Levush. This is something which puts Purim, in terms of its physical intensity, more than any other Yom Tov. Because it's Me'ikara Iskin L'Mishta V'Simcha. Particularly in that order, I think, of Mishta V'Simcha, which we've yet to explain. And I think if we look at the Rambam, we find maybe probably the most clearest expression of this kind of mishte, being something more than just simcha. There's like this intensity of simchas Purim. By the way, if you ever heard this, there's like a greeting people greet each other with on Purim. It's like simchas Purim. You just say simchas Purim. I don't even know how that works. I don't know if it doesn't sound like a greeting to me. But you just say the simcha of Purim. What?
Isn't that what we say?
No, I think it's like, simchas is not the way you'd say happy, like...
Happiness.
Yeah, it's like this, simchas is like I don't know the grammar, the grammatical term. But we say like simchas Purim instead of Good Yontif or Chag Sameach. And I wonder if it's maybe connected a little bit to what we're discussing now. You know, like the outsized role of simcha, the intensity of simcha of Purim. And if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah V'Chanukah, source number 6, I think this really becomes very clear. When the Rambam gets to describing the chiyuv of Simcha u'mishta on Purim, he says as follows. First note, the Rambam doesn't have this whole idea of chatzi lachem, chatzi lashem, which we'll see in just a minute, but in Halacha Tesvav, the Rambam says, Ketzad chova su'uda zu. So what is the obligation of su'uda on Purim? The Rambam kind of tells us what his su'uda looked like. It's always interesting whenever the Rambam gives us like ingredients, you know, and tells us exactly how to... go about a certain meal. Does anyone know a different instance where the Rambam like gives ingredients? Charoses. They say the joke, you know, the Rambam in Hilchos Chametz to Matzah tells us about the ingredients, what he put, what you're supposed to put in charoses. So they say, it's kind of like a joke, but it was probably actually happened, that like Rav Chaim would prepare the charoses, you know, for his Seder, he would like do it with a Rambam, like open right next to him. That was his cookbook. Halavai should be all our cookbooks also, beyond, you know, the corporeal sense, but also beyond that. So the Rambam also here advises, tells us what this suit is supposed to look like. And a lot of this he's totally coming up with on his own. There's no explicit Gemara that says what the Rambam is about to say. Sheyochal basar, you should eat meat. Again, not a Gemara, not an explicit Gemara anywhere. V'yitkan su'uda no'e kifi asher timtza yado. So it's basar, and he adds in, you're supposed to make this like delectable, you know, unbelievable meal, and then kifi asher timtza yado, like go all out within your means. Don't skimp on the seuda of Purim. Words we don't find in parallel when he speaks about the simcha of Chag.
Does the Rambam hold the extent of like on Pesach, like sell all the clothes off your back for dollars?
Yeah, that's also what I was wondering. Like you're saying kifi asher timtza yado. Yeah, I think more what probably the Rambam is saying is like whatever you can afford, you need to like bring out your highest standards, whatever you're capable of on Purim. It needs to be your very best.
If you're getting sushi, don't get it from like...
Yeah, get the best sushi. Don't take any, yeah, don't take a side on things. Simply sushi, whatever, I didn't say it.
Whoa.
But,
You go to Cedar Market.
So that's kind of number one, but when you look, and there are like no exceptions, it's like basar and only basar. Like the, you know, the top cut. So if you look in Hilchos Yom Tov, in source number 9, when the Rambam speaks about this, it's a little bit different, and he's a little bit less intense about what he requires. He says at the very end of Halacha Yud Zayin, if you look, V'samachta b'chagecha, afa pishya simcha amura kani korban shlamim, kimo sha'anu mevarim milchus chagiga, Yesh b'chlal oso simcha l'smoach uvana b'bnei beso chalecha vecha karoilo. Here he says that it depends on who you are. That should help you fulfill the simcha of Yom Tov. V'samachta b'chagecha. Keitzad, sektanim, you give klayos v'agozim u'megdanos, megdanos, v'hanashim, kona lehem v'gadim v'tachshitim v'nam k'vim emona. You give the kids like trinkets and candies. And the women, you've got clothing and jewelry. V'hanashim ochlim basar v'shosin yayin, she'en simcha ala b'basar v'en simcha ala b'yayin. Very different, I think. Not very different, but subtly and importantly different from the way he talks about the Seuda of Purim. There's no ulteriority, there's no other alternative, sorry. No other options, it's basar, it's your very best. It's for everyone, he doesn't distinguish between women and children. Yeah.
Are klayos kidneys or is that with a chaf?
No, yeah, that's with a chaf, that's with a chaf. Yeah, that's coming up.
What does it mean here?
Klayos here is like nuts.
Klayos are also nuts?
Yeah, yeah. Like shells, I think.
And
Migdanos, I'm not sure where they are. Like feel also like candies or what are they?
They're like nuts for the rolling game.
Like trinkets or something. Yeah.
There's something about
it. I'm like broadly translating all of it as like candies and toys. Like in Pesachim.
For Chorish.
I think this is like kind of comes up when he talks about like they're doing Sibur Yitzias Mitzrayim. It comes up in the Gemara's in Pesachim. And it's not like a full table with a full spread, the way the Rambam also describes it in Hilchos Purim. It's not like merrymaking the way it is on Purim, but finding ways, and here's the kicker, to deepen or express the feelings of simcha we have and the appreciation we have for Yom Tov and its opportunities. As we'll soon see on Yom Tov, it's not the joy of food or being festive, but it's the joy of mitzvah. It's the simcha shel mitzvah, the idea of doing avodah, avodas Hashem, you know, in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam and the opportunities that the Yom Tov affords. But that's in stark contrast, in, as we'll see, with Simchas Kreso, with indulgent and self-serving kind of Simcha. That the Rambam is clear cannot be the type of Simcha that we have on Yom Tov. But even to go further, drinking, if you go back to the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah, for the Rambam continues exactly where we left off in Halacha Tezvav, that part of the Chi of Seuda, this is the Chiddush of the Rambam, is to be shose yayin ad she yishtaker v'yirdam v'shichris. Rambam thinks, we all know Chayiv Inish Levesumei, it's a Gemara, but the Rambam incorporated that halacha into the laws of Seuda. By the way, as an aside, just people should know, for the Rambam, the drinking really should only take place, for sure in the daytime, but also only in the context and the confines of Seuda, because for the Rambam, that's what it's a chiyuv. And for the Rambam, the idea that this chiyuv is a chiyuv in Seuda goes way beyond the type of simcha that we have on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, there's no obligation, you know, to drink and to be, you know, again, for the Rambam, it's to fall asleep. That's also a famous position of the Rambam. For Yerdam, to go to sleep and not to be, like, intoxicated and smashed, but just to kind of have enough that you doze off like a sedative, rather than, you know, something that is very unhealthy. I'm not even saying the Rambam's coming from that place. I don't think he's worried about health concerns necessarily, but that's how he understood the obligation to drink. But for him, it's also part of the Seuda, and that's not the case when it comes to Simchas Yom Tov. There's no obligation to drink with these quantities and this quantities of alcohol. And frankly, the level of drunkenness, of shichrus, that we require in Purim is the antithesis of the Simchas Yom Tov that we're supposed to have on Yom Tov. Come and hear the words of the Rambam back to Hilchos Yom Tov. We're going back and forth. The Rambam, in the very conclusion of Hilchos Yom Tov, now we turn the page to 4, says in Halacha Chaf, the conclusion of his discussions about Simchas Yom Tov, Kishe Adam Ochel B'Shose, V'Sameach B'Regel, Lo Yimashech B'Yayin U'V'Schok U'V'Kalas Rosh, it shouldn't be frivolous. It shouldn't be overdone with lightheadedness. The Yomar, you shouldn't think. Sometimes people say this. Shekomi sheyosef azeh yarbe b'mitzvah simcha. The more you eat, the better piece of steak, the more drinking you do, that, oh, das is simchas yom tov. A person shouldn't think that. It's a misnomer. Shehashichrus v'hasechol karbe v'kalos rosh eina simcha. It's not simcha. That's not what simcha is. Elaholulus v'sichlus. It's frivolity. It's joking around. That's not what the mitzvah of v'samachta b'chagecha is coming to do. El al ha-simcha sheyesh ba avodas yotzer hakol. It's supposed to be a simcha that one wants, that one experiences when they're in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, when they're serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. Tachas asher lo avadita et Hashem Elokecha v'simcha v'tuv leva. Halamadita sheha'avoda v'simcha. Worshipping the Ribbono Shel Olam is supposed to be b'simcha. So sometimes when we bring kind of stimulants, foods, we demonstrate the simcha that we have to be servicing the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Eif Shel Lavod Es Hashem Lo Mitoch Schok V'Lo Mitoch Kalas Rosh V'Lo Mitoch Shechras. That cannot be the simcha of Simchas Avodas Hashem. But in stark contrast to the simcha that we have when it comes to the holiday of Purim, there's no such refrain. Never mind the fact that the ultimate kiyum of Simcha and Purim is Chayv Inish Levesume Shechras. This is something the Rav noted in Days of Deliverance. The kind of opposites, the intense drinking on Purim, the partying, the Mishneh, which is in the, not only not the goal, but antithetical to the Simcha of Yom Tov. But even as we find that on a, that the physical intensity is much more in the Simcha of Purim, it's also less as well in terms of its scope and how much it affects the entire Yom Tov. I don't want to go so into it, but the halacha is, and this is also in the Rambam on your source sheet, that the mitzvah of Seudah is only fulfilled in the daytime. If you have a Seudah at night, there's no obligation to have the Seudah at night, and if you have the Seudah at night, you haven't fulfilled your obligation of Seudah's Purim. On Shulchan Aruch, we quote this halacha. In the Ramah, he talks about having some kind of su'udah at night as well, having some type of eating experience. And the Mamar Mordechai, you know, is the last source on source 19, from France, like the late 18th century, quotes the Shita that maybe the reason to have a su'udah at night is so that it's like Shabbos, Leilei Kiyoma. In general, when it comes to Yom Tov or Shabbos, we talk about su'udah, there's a su'udah at night, there's a su'udah in the day. Because the entire holiday, the entire day that has Kedusha, is fair game for the Simcha. Because if Simcha is an expression of the Kedusha Sayom, then you should have it, and you could have a kiyum of Simcha, the eating and drinking, any time in the entire day. But when it comes to Purim, the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens, the way the Rambam has it, you only have one meal. One Seuda. Because it's not about the day of Purim per se. It's not an expression of the Kedushas Hayom. It's that there's an obligation on Purim, maybe that's what Purim was for, to have a party, to have a Mishnah. So even as it's more intense, it's also more limited, it's more narrow in terms of what it's really about. And probably, if it both has Kulos and Chumras, it's different, it's better in some ways, it's more intense in some ways, but it's also limited in others, it's only the daytime. It's a specific meal. Then maybe it's also just different. It's a different kind. It's not a simcha, but it's a mishneh. But if it's the right type of mishneh, then maybe it can achieve a different kind, but also a true kind of simcha. And so the question is, both in terms of having a day which has no isur malacha, but also a day where it's mishneh, ultimately with the goal of simcha, but it's a mishneh-driven kind of a simcha, why in these two respects, and maybe others that we just are not going to go into now, does Purim, or was Purim decided to be established differently than a typical Yom Tov? Why? The Rav, talking in Days of Deliverance about this issue of Mishneh, sees it as being rooted in Purim's lesser status than other Yom Tovim. He basically said, I'll just read a paragraph or two. I know we only have a few more minutes. I'm already over time, but I don't want to keep you here too long. The Rav said that on Purim, the popular, like the widespread concept of Simcha, the secular concept of Simcha, is accepted. It's about joy and gaiety. It has nothing to do with the feeling of tranquility, serenity, or peace of mind. It's not an inner experience, the way that Simcha's Yom Tov is, Simcha Shal Mitzvah. It's not that. Rather, it is more active. And here's the line. As if, the Rav says, I were happy. Sometimes we see people acting as if they are happy, but it is a false sense. People try to deceive themselves and deceive others and somehow give the impression as if they were happy while they are in fact very unhappy and depressed. And this concept of happiness was introduced for Purim. As I said, the Rav sees this as something, a lesser status. We can't really be happy on Purim. So we do this instead. We do Mishnah. I don't think it explains the evidence that we suggested. But the Rav, for the most part, saw this different simcha as a lesser simcha. And for what reason? Why did he think that's true on the holiday of Purim? So the Rav suggested that it has to do with the insecurity that comes out from the story of the Megillah, and is really a story, existentially, about the Jew in every single generation. The Megillah is a story of Jewish insecurity and instability. He said, of course the Jews defeated Haman and thwarted the immediate threat. There was a miracle. So of course we celebrate the miracle, the Jews were saved. So we have to celebrate it. But he says, there is no guarantee and no security that another one won't start up. Purim was not transformative in the way that other holidays are. Holiday Pesach was totally transformational for the Jewish people. Purim, we were saved by an immediate threat. There was Hatzalah. That's why Chazal, he says, did not introduce the concept of Simcha as it was recommended by the Torah vis-a-vis the three festivals. Rather, they introduced a different concept of Simcha. Fun, gaiety, which is just acting, he says, and not sincere. Because the victory is not final, the triumph not decisive, and a repetition is always possible. I don't know if this fully explains the whole story of Mishneh v'Simcha, because I also think it's not only Mishneh, but it's a Mishneh that leads to Simcha. Simcha is an intrinsic, significant quality. And anyway, how exactly would this explain the fact that there's Beshita, there's no Isser Malacha, something we discussed much earlier? So Rav Rosenzweig suggested, I'll also read you just a paragraph, and really we're almost done. But you'll see as we go that I'm going to say I'm almost done, and not always almost done. I'm joking, I won't do that too much. But I really am almost done. Rav Rosenzweig suggested once, I'll read just from something that I have notes on, that the whole point, and this speaks initially to the Isser Malacha, that there's no Isser Malacha, that Purim was created particularly as the everyday holiday. The Chol holiday, which is why a lot of its structure is different than others. It's meant to be a Yom Chol. That's a holiday. It's meant to be that exactly that way. Because maybe the whole idea of Purim and the story of the Hashkacha, the Hatzalah, is a story that even when we think the day is ordinary and that all hope is lost, the Ribbono Shel Olam shows us that really He is there all along, guiding every single day and having the potential to turn every day into a special day. That is the story of Purim. If I can just go off on my own a little bit, Purim basically is a day about the protection and the sense of security we can feel on the daily. Not only under extreme conditions, brinks of disaster, with miraculous and divinely orchestrated solutions. It's the safety we feel being in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Melech that we see on every turn of every page. And it just takes sometimes, even though it takes retrospective sometimes, to look back and identify that the Ribbono Shel Olam was always running things, the truth is that He is always there. So to explain the partying and the Isser Malacha, partying and feasting can be deeply a part of that as well. Laniyas Daiti, there are two types of Mishneh, two ways a person can party, but only one of them ultimately gets transformed into real Simcha. Only one of them is Mishneh that creates Simcha, Mishneh v'Simcha. You could have a party where you're reckless and you're carefree. Eat, drink, be merry, for tomorrow you may die, as the Epicurean philosophy goes. There's no sense, in other words, that our lives are in our control. We take it to be random, and so we live without responsibility, camouflaging the discomfort and insecurity that we have with our lives. It's one that belies bitachon, and it's reflective of shichachas Hashem, that sees no mashgiach, no destiny, no plan, no Churban HaBayis that's ever going to be rebuilt. I think this is the kind of Mishnah that opens up the story of the Megillah, Megillas Esther in Perek Aleph. A carefree, there's no tomorrow, Shichachas Hashem kind of Mishnah. But in stark contrast to that Mishnah, the Mishnah of Perek Aleph, comes the Mishnah of Simcha of Perek Tes, the end of the Megillah, the Mishnah of Simcha of Purim, where we can enjoy ourselves and be a little bit less prudent, a little bit less begrudging, as we find solace and security in Yeshua's Hashem and His Hashkacha. We take our feet off the pedal a little bit basically, and cede it to the Ribono Shel Olam. Perhaps we even try to go to sleep. No one is more out of control than someone who's unconscious. Maybe that's the point of the Rambam and the Ramah, to take ourselves out of control. Because the day and every day, as ordinary as it is, demonstrates our faith and reliance on the redemptive capacity of the Ribono Shel Olam to take us from Afela Laora, Me'eva Le'Yom Tov. Any day and any duress can be flipped, can be v'nahafochu with the Ribono Shel Olam in our lives. I think it's that kind of simcha, mishneh, that brings a very unique and very special kind of simcha. It lifts up the eyes of those who feel most desperate, evyonim, broken, and this is the greatest expression of Simcha's Purim. This is exactly what we mean when we talk about Mishneh v'Simcha, and the type of Mishneh v'Simcha, the type of Yom Tov that Purim was established to be. So with that, basically, I guess, I wish everybody a wonderful Simcha's Purim, and Emir Tashem.